You're listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. When it comes to watching television, we have more choices than ever to find shows, movies, and other videos to watch on our home screens. As the traditional broadcast cable and satellite providers battle with streaming services like Netflix and Hulu for our subscription and ad dollars, another player in the digital video industry has quietly moved to the forefront. According to data from Nielsen, the top streaming service we use on our televisions is actually YouTube, not their paid service YouTube TV, but the regular free video social media platform. Viewers are spending more and more time watching videos on YouTube. That cuts into the time they might otherwise spend watching cable or streaming services. That doesn't include the time spent watching on our phones, whether it's YouTube or the dominance of TikTok in the short-form video market. It's all creating a new landscape for television producers and their audiences as they compete not just for our dollars, but our attention. You could join in at ideas@WPR.org. Send us an email. How much do you watch YouTube or TikTok? Have videos on social media eclipsed some or most of the television you watch? What do you think of the quality on videos on YouTube and other social media? Do you prefer premium content you might pay for on streaming services? Send us an email, ideas@WPR.org. Jonathan Gray is professor of media and cultural studies at UW-Madison, where he researches how media, entertainment, and its audiences interact. And Derek Johnson is department chair and professor of media and cultural studies at UW-Madison, who focuses on media industries. I talked to them last month. Here's a listen. Jonathan, why do you think audiences, especially but not exclusively younger viewers, have gravitated toward YouTube as a top streaming service?
Yeah, so I mean, two things I'd throw out there. I mean, I'm sure there are many more, but one is just access. I think when I talk to audiences, a lot of times there's a lot of confusion about, you know, they hear you should watch this show, but which service is on that? Is that on? Oh, I don't have that service. And as more and more people have cut the cord, and almost everyone has internet access, and so YouTube is just there. I think the other thing is that YouTube picked up a lot of kids. A lot of kids had tablets, or they could get onto YouTube Kids, and so they became YouTube addicts at a very early age. And YouTube has tons of content for kids, and so we're starting to see a point where some of those have aged up, and so it's not just getting the kids now; it's also getting the teens and the 20s.
And Derek, in my head, you know, watching a TV show or a movie on a streaming service versus watching some clips on YouTube are different activities. But it sounds like Netflix's and Hulu's of the world see YouTube as a threat. Can you talk about how this is affecting those industries?
Yeah, I mean, I think they are a threat. They're a competitor in the sense that you can find them in the same spaces, right? You pull up your device and you can choose between different apps. You can choose between Netflix. You can choose between YouTube. Like, there's only so much time in the day. So anything that might take up our attention on a screen is potentially competing with one another. But I also think it's true that while there's competition, there's also collaboration. And a lot of these companies work together. You know, YouTube is a great site of promotion for traditional legacy television companies, television studios that create content for NBC or CBS also might create content for Netflix. So, you know, there's a lot of overlap and cooperation between these companies. So there might be like a competition mm-hmm. for dominance, but it's also an ecosystem where like these companies rely upon one another. And, you know, if one was to go extinct, like, that might be good for another competitor, but could have real implications for them too, for the ways that they depend on one another.
And John, for viewer perception, I know in the days of, you know, print newspapers, people in the industry saw a real difference between the editorial page and the news pages. So here on radio, I think of the newscast as one thing and the talk show as another thing. I know that readers of newspapers and viewers or listeners to radio, it's all one thing. How do we think of this as a whole bunch of different activities, viewing on little screens, viewing on big screens, or is it all just part of, this media environment, and it's all the same to the viewers?
Yeah, I think to many viewers, that's true. I mean, I constantly hear people tell me that they don't watch television anymore, and then they'll tell me about all the shows they think are great, meaning they're watching on their laptop or, you know, they're watching on their phone. And I think so many of us are watching on so many different devices that as we, you know, move from one to the other, we're not necessarily sort of marking the distinctions and the differences as much as used to be the case.
I want to talk, Derek, about the people creating content. If I run Netflix, well, for a while I was producing all this original Netflix content and or bringing on stuff from other producers. If I'm YouTube, I think they dabble a little in original content, but it's mainly user-created or people showing clips of stuff from everything else. How does this competition affect the stuff that gets made in the first place these days?
Yeah, I mean, it's a really complex environment of content creation where, you know, YouTube does pay for content in the sense that it cuts its content creators. If they reach a certain threshold, right, you get a portion of the advertising revenue. So, you know, YouTube does have content expenses when it cuts those creators in. You know, but everyone has their own model, right? Like Netflix will pay you up front if you're a content producer trying to make television for them. You'll see a bigger upfront payment for that content. Whereas if you're working in the old network system, right, it's going to take years before you see, a profit from the show that you make, because it's got to go through one market after another before you start to see those profits. So it all just, you know, everyone has their different model of monetizing and compensating content creators.
Talking to Derek Johnson and Jonathan Gray, both with the Media and Cultural Studies Department at UW-Madison, looking at the ever-changing world of what we watch on a screen, from the old days of broadcast TV to cable, then streaming, now YouTube and TikTok becoming dominant forces in capturing our eyeballs and trying to make money out of our attention. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Love to hear from you how your viewing habits have and haven't changed over the years. Younger listeners, do you have a big screen to watch things on, or is it all on your phone? Join in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. You can also email ideas@wpr.org. John, when it comes to the stuff we see, I mean, I get, you know, there's a TikTok style, there are YouTube styles. How much do those formats shape the content that we end up seeing on them?
I mean, the short formness of it is the key thing, I think, for many people. I mean, what's weird, too, is all the platforms borrow from each other. You know, like my daughter watches YouTube and she thinks I'm a magician because I've seen things on Instagram, you know, 2 weeks before she has. But if you're on TikTok, you've seen it 3 months before I've seen it. But it's the short formness, I think, that's key. I think people can still often spend as much time watching, but instead of watching, say, one 45-minute episode or, you know, three sitcoms in a row, you're watching, you know, 800 small clips of something.
Yeah, I've had that experience. Like, oh, I don't have the commitment right now to watch a TV show. I'll watch a video or two, and then pretty soon I've watched the exact same block of time. Now, for Netflix, say, Derek, how much of a worry is that? I don't see Netflix coming out with a series of, you know, 45-second videos to try to compete with that.
No, I don't think that's Netflix's model. I think Netflix's model is actually fairly traditional, right? Like they're bringing television to us in a new way via streaming platform, but they're looking at long-form content. They want to produce television series. They want to produce, feature films. Yeah, it doesn't seem to be in the pipeline for Netflix to be developing that.
Is that a worry, do you think, for people in the industry? If I'm producing 2-hour movies or 45-minute long TV shows, am I worried that there's a generation being trained to watch things in 1 minute at most increments?
I think yes. To just give you a simple answer, that seems absolutely possible.
Let's bring out John. Yeah.
For me, I think one of the key questions is it generational, or like will they grow out of it, or is this what the generation is doing? And if I was a content creator, or if I was Netflix, that's where I'd be really worried is this group 10 years from now all going to be watching shows like we are, or is this the end of it?
Let's bring out a caller at 800-642-1234. Jim is with us in Kenosha. Jim, hi.
Hi. So Google buys YouTube. Oh, what's it been since 2006? They're a very rich country, and I wanted YouTube to be a source of news for me. Try the news thing. You know, they get stuff that's dated. It's why can't they have YouTube reporters? Why can't they throw some of their millions and millions of dollars to be a legitimate news source?
Jim, interesting. I don't know that. I mean, YouTube has videos that people produce, that networks might produce, and other news sources that end up on YouTube. It doesn't seem like YouTube has at all gone into, we are going to be an original content source when it comes to news.
No, I mean, there was a brief time where YouTube was trying to develop content for its subscription service. But I think largely YouTube presents itself as the distributor, right? It's up to the users of YouTube to actually produce the content. And that that's actually very convenient for YouTube in that it takes a lot of responsibility away from them. It's not their job to approve the content to make sure that we're getting, high-quality journalism. It's just to provide the platform in which people would use it.
And thanks for that call, Jim. John, we've been mostly focusing on, fiction, TV shows and movies, but as these as all these platforms change and evolve, is news getting squeezed out in some way? I know a lot of news departments have in various newspapers and elsewhere. Where do you see news going in this platform war?
Yeah, I mean, it's struggling, right? I mean, there lots of people are happy lots of platforms are happy to distribute and to circulate, but the amount of money that comes out of that is often negligible. So, I mean, we see this, the number of venues that can actually do reporting, actually pay the money to look into a story rather than just read something off YouTube or off Google. That's going down. I mean, I'm not an optimist about the future of journalism.
Like any content, it costs money to create it. And so if we can offload that to the user who's going to be the producer, it's up to the users to produce good news. And, it's really on the user of YouTube and all of us collectively who are using the platform to decide, is this going to be a good platform for news or not? And I kind of share Jonathan's pessimism about the decision that we seem to have made here.
Yeah, I mean, if you want me to throw a bone of optimism, it is right that one of the challenges that led a lot of people away from the established news is the idea of three great men who could tell you everything. And one of the things that YouTube does provide is the possibility to expand the number of voices. Now, some of those voices are crazy. Some of them are wrong. Some of them are peddling conspiracy theories, but some of them are also giving, sides of a story that you otherwise wouldn't hear.
And we also shouldn't pretend that the legacy news organizations weren't already disinvesting in their journalism divisions before YouTube hit the scene.
Sure.
We're talking to UW-Madison Media Studies professors Jonathan Gray and Derek Johnson about video apps like YouTube and TikTok as competition for television and streaming services. You could join in at 800-642-1234. How much of your video consumption comes from YouTube and TikTok or Instagram or the Reels on Facebook? The list goes on and on. Have you moved into particular streaming services? Have you moved on from streaming services? Or do you prefer the good old days of broadcast TV or cable or whatever era is your media golden age? Join in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or email ideas@WPR.org. We'll pick up the conversation coming up on Central Time. You're listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. We continue our talk about YouTube, TikTok, and other social media platforms as top competitors to TV and streaming services. Our guests today are UW-Madison Media and Cultural Studies professors Jonathan Gray and Derek Johnson. You can join in at 800-642-1234. I'd love to hear about your screen viewing habits. Do you find yourself watching more and more, say, on YouTube and less on streaming services? Where are you in your evolution on how and what you watch on screens, big and small? Join in at 800-642-1234 with your experiences, your questions. That's 800-642-1234. Want to give a listen to comedian Jon Stewart, who recently returned after a hiatus to hosting The Daily Show on Comedy Central. He took an audience question about whether TV is dying as more people just watch videos on their phones.
Don't you still watch TV, but you just watch it on your computer?
On TikTok, on your phone.
Right, but you understand that that's still TV. It's just you're watching it in a different delivery service. It's like heroin is heroin, whether you snort it or shoot it. It's still an opiate for the masses, as is television. You're just getting it in smaller bites, but it's still TV. We make it.
You could join in. Let us know how you get your TV, whatever you want to call it, what other form, 800-642-1234. Jonathan, during the break, we were talking about how YouTube and other platforms serve stuff up for us. I think a lot of us have been paralyzed. I think back in the days of video stores, you know, paralyzed by the choice out there. And how do you make that decision? Well, now algorithms make it for us. Do we like that?
Well, I mean, when I do audience research, I like there's one group of people who just love studying and working out what they're going to watch. But I hear more and more people that really love things like YouTube or TikTok or Instagram because they do the work for them. It's funny because there's something nostalgic when I listen to them. It makes me think of the great experience of like watching cable TV when you've got 100 channels and you can just keep watching and it's the kind of miasma of it. And nominally your thumb's doing something, but you kind of forgotten it is. And I think that there's a joy for some people of not needing to sort of, you know, go and read the critics and find out which service is on and make the selection. You just turn it on and it'll just keep following, you know, the next recommendation. Watch that. Click, click, click. Keep going. An hour later, you're done.
Yeah. I mean, Netflix has recommendations too, but I find like Netflix still does require a fair amount of like input in order to get going. Like you still have, they're going to give you lots of recommendations, but you still have to make a choice. And that can still feel, I think, overwhelming to a lot of viewers.
Yeah. And you know, what's funny is a lot of times I've heard this from people I've interviewed where they, when I ask them how good the recommendations from Netflix are, they think the recommendations from Netflix are really bad, but they think the recommendations that YouTube or TikTok gave them for shows they should watch on Netflix are really good. So they like those algorithms, just not the Netflix one.
Let's go back to our callers. Darlene is with us in Merrill. Darlene, hi.
Hi, how are you?
Good. What'd you want to tell us about, Darlene?
I just wanted to say I was listening to you guys through the Ideas Network on my, you know, streaming it on my TV, but I like to hear the news from broadcasting, from regular TV, you know, internet these days, you know, people can put different things on there, you know, it's, do you believe it or not? I just like to get the news since I was a kid. Mm. And I just think that's the best way to go.
All right, Darlene, thanks for the call. Derek, thoughts on authority, I guess, reliability of sources as people encounter them in different mediums.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know if this is about authority, but, you know, I really appreciated Darlene's comment because one of the things that I find is hardest to find in the current environment is local, I mean, even like national broadcast news programming, right? Like there's a lot, the streaming economy is set up to deliver us our entertainment programming, but it's a lot harder to get your local news or anything that's carried on your local broadcast affiliate in the streaming environment. It's not impossible, but it's trickier.
Of course. Now I keyed in on something else Darlene just said there. She's listening to us a radio show on her TV. I don't know. That means something, Jonathan. I don't know what.
Yeah. I mean, all the media have just sort of blended into the one these days. As I said earlier, you know, the people who don't think they're watching TV because they're watching it on the internet, or people who say they don't listen to any radio because, again, it's on the internet. But they're
right. I've had people say, I like your podcast, Rob. And I'm like, yeah. What podcast? Just the archive version of this show. Yeah.
Yeah. So I sat on the Peabody board for a few years judging. And what I loved is even the board members, there was a category called radio podcast. And in the first few years, everyone just called it the radio category. And then in the last few years, everyone just called it the podcast category, no matter what was in it. And people would say that was a great radio show when it was a podcast, or that's a great podcast. But
what I think is interesting about that, we all seem to agree, Jon Stewart agrees that like it's all the same thing. But what you're describing is people still have a sense that it is different in some way, right? They strongly believe they are not watching television. And so even as things are converging, those perceived boundaries still seem to matter quite a bit.
I want to, you mentioned the word nostalgia earlier, and in my head, and maybe it's because I do live radio, I are we losing something when we don't have that shared experience where I'm watching this show at the same time as lots of other people? They're not in the room with me, but it's a common shared experience versus we're all experience this thing at our leisure when we choose to stream it. Does that mean anything, Derek?
I think that's something that Netflix in particular has struggled with, where, you know, they were innovating in releasing the entire season of a series all at once. And then you would have people burn through it all in one weekend, or some people would wait and burn through it the next weekend. And as a result, there was like, you know, a quick blip of social media conversation about series, but then they'd quickly fall off the radar, right? So a lot of streaming services that followed in the wake of Netflix experimented with, like, well, let's go back to one episode a week, because that allows us to structure that shared experience and all the social media conversation that might come with it a little bit more strategically.
And just 30 seconds, Jonathan, I think sometimes by the time we're talking about a change, the new change is already coming along. What do you have your eye on next to watch for in the world of changing platforms?
Geez. I mean, what I'm most amused by is actually how we're going back to an advertising model. Most of the streamers are forcing ads on, and we're starting to see TV look a lot like it looked 30 years ago.
And look a lot more like YouTube.
Yeah.
We'll leave it there. Jonathan, thanks for joining us.
Thanks.
And Derek, thanks for being with us.
Thank you.
Derek Johnson and Jonathan Gray are professors of media and cultural studies at UW-Madison. We listened back to our conversation with them about YouTube and TikTok and how they're challenging streaming services, cable, and broadcast television. Coming up tomorrow on The Morning Show with Kate Archer Kent, it's film festival season in Wisconsin. Get a preview of Milwaukee's Film Festival. Find out what's on the list of great movies to check out. Love to hear from you if you're a fan of that or any other Wisconsin Film Festival. Let us know. Email ideas@WPR.org. Also tomorrow morning, what does it take to be happy? What does it mean to be happy? A Wisconsin happiness researcher joins the show for a look at meaning, contentment, purpose, and what makes life better and maybe happier. That and more, all coming up tomorrow morning here on the Ideas Network.